From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
And joining us is our first guest, Kathy Collentine. She is the Associate Director of Sierra Club's Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign, and she's here to talk about last week's decision by the pipeline company TC Energy to cancel the construction of the remaining portion of the Keystone XL pipeline. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Absolutely, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, let's start. We've been on air for 14 years, and I think we've covered the Keystone XL pipeline for 12 of those 14 years in one form or another. This pipeline and the issues and story of it have been around for a long time, but let's start with some background and history about this pipeline. What was this pipeline intended? We can now talk about it almost in the past tense, per se. What was this pipeline intended to do?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. So 13 years, this has been what we've termed the zombie pipeline, the one that kept on trying to move forward, but finally is officially terminated, and we're very excited to see that announcement confirmed by TC Energy. And so as folks may know, after all this time, that the northern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline was intended to carry about 830,000 gallons per day of tar sands from Alberta, Canada, down through Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska, where it would have linked up with other pipelines that are headed for the Gulf Coast and predominantly the product within there, this sticky, dirty, peanut butter-like substance, tar sands, would have been headed to the Gulf Coast for export.
Right, and I think it's important that we also talk a little bit about what tar sands-based oil is, because it's a particularly nasty, noxious type of crude oil, correct?
Exactly. So it's one of the dirtiest forms of fossil fuel energy that exists, and for a long time, up in Canada, under the boreal forest, in some of the most beautiful places that you could visit in the world, lies this substance, and as there were technologies developed to extract it, I think folks got dollar signs in their eyes and thought, gosh, this is stuff that we could not only extract, but then send to many places in the world. And so the Keystone XL pipeline was part of, a broader plan, some of which has been implemented. There are pipelines moving tar sands, but for this fossil fuel to be extracted, and the impacts are huge. The amount of energy, the waste product, the tailings ponds that result from the extraction of this product, and just the extraction alone, even if it never went anywhere, is a huge impact on both the climate and the communities, especially indigenous communities in the Athabascan region of Alberta, Canada, where it's extracted, and that doesn't even begin to talk about the impacts and the risks that it presents then as it's moved through these pipelines down to export and or refineries here in the United States and elsewhere.
Right, and I want to highlight again the fact that this is a surface-based extraction of, well, what as described, tar sands. This isn't the classic drill rig, drill down thousands of feet in the ground, frack and pull crude oil out of the ground. This is a process that involves first, raising of the forest, pumping down of wetland systems, just a complete wholesale destruction of the surface area, then to literally dig up this tar sands, which is just sometimes 10, 20, 50, 60 feet down into the soil, and then kind of squeeze out the oil from these tar sands. So it's a particularly nasty, like you say, environmentally damaging process.
With respect to the environment, what are the repercussions?
Well, so like many fossil fuels, but as we said, tar sands takes this to a new level. What does that mean for habitat loss? And we're talking about the boreal forest. in Canada, right? There aren't that many places that this habitat still exists for the species that live there. And so taking that away, but not only that, but then the impacts to the water and a lot of this heavy machinery, you know, we're talking new roads into areas that wouldn't necessarily have been industrialized in any other way in the past. And now you have these massive mines, you know, and as was described, that go many, many feet into the ground. They get larger, right, as they keep on extracting and they keep on expanding. And the machinery that they use in these, I mean, I've never seen machines that are larger than this. So to get them in, to get them out, to create all of the, you know, infrastructure that surrounds these particular facilities because people are living and working up there, it's a huge amount of forest land that has been destroyed for this industry to extract. And there's real impacts both to the First Nations folks who live in that area, who have called that area home since time immemorial, but also to the water and many of the animals that live in that region. And that's just extraction. In addition to that, then we're talking about pipelines, right? Like the now canceled Keystone XL pipeline, over the course of the last 13 years since it was proposed, like many of these pipelines, there were stages where, the company did start to clear the pathway, to cut down trees, to, secure easements from landowners and from other entities that had, surface property rights to the land that the pipeline's cutting through. And so there are places where along the route of the proposed pipeline, even though now it's canceled, there are impacts that will not be reversed overnight by the company saying that they're walking away. If they've cut down stands of trees or they've cut through areas of wetlands to prepare them for what they thought was going to become a pipeline, which now, of course, is not, they have left an impact. In 2020, we saw the company move ahead under the Trump administration with the construction of the border crossing segment of this pipeline, right? That is pipe that's in the ground. Those are impacts that have happened, even though that pipe will never move tar sands. And those are the kind of impacts that we cannot reverse overnight, regardless of a pipeline being canceled. Those are impacts that landowners along the route in places like Nebraska are still fighting in courts to reverse the way that land was taken from them, that rights and access was taken from them. So the impacts go far beyond the environmental impacts to the human impacts of, many of the folks who actually have been some of the leaders in this movement against the Keystone XL pipeline and against the expansion of the tar sands industry.
We're speaking with Kathy Collentine. She's Associate Director of Sierra Club's Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign. We're talking about the Keystone XL pipeline and the decision last week by kind of the, ostensibly the owner of the pipeline, TC Energy, decision to cancel further construction of the pipeline. And again, Kathy, when we're talking, the pipeline, as you describe it, it's basically the pipeline that would have run from the U.S.-Canadian border down to southern Nebraska, specifically Steel City, Nebraska, where there is a collection and distribution center. And then from there, it gets moved to via other pipelines to refineries down in the Gulf Coast and maybe in Illinois, et cetera. So this is really the pipeline segment that running from, say, U.S.-Canada border, I think in Montana, down to Nebraska, that's the one that's not going to be constructed?
That is correct, yes. From the border in Montana on south, and we were pleased to see the company walk away from this. We were even more pleased to see the Biden administration in January cancel the remaining presidential permit that had been put in place by the Trump administration, and knowing that, we had spent those 4 years before we saw the Biden administration back away from this permit, really having to work in many different ways to ensure that this project didn't go forward at that point, and we are very pleased to see that now it will not.
Right. So if I understand, you just said that the Trump administration had basically green-lighted the project via kind of an executive decision, the president's the approval of the permit. Now, what did the Biden administration do in January to, in effect, reverse that, if not just reverse it?
Yeah, so the presidential permit is for pipelines that cross an international border, right? And so coming down from Canada, the Keystone XL pipeline would have crossed an international border. And so that's the place where the president or where you know, the executive office has jurisdiction over permitting. And so in addition to that, there are other permitting processes at the state and federal level. But that particular permit, the Trump administration was able to come in and green light that, and then that was the exact same permit, because the project had not been completed, was not, you know, in operation under the Trump administration, then that the Biden administration was able to go in and revoke that particular permit, which meant that they didn't have a crucial permit to move ahead with construction, and therefore the company, you know, took their time here, but did end up walking away. There were a number of active lawsuits against this project for various other permits that had been granted, given that they had never done adequate environmental review on this particular project.
Okay, so is the pipeline canceled for, say, for now? I mean, could we have the next president come on board and say, you know what, I'm re-upping the permit?
At this point, with the company walking, and this is why this decision, even though we saw something in January that we celebrated as well from the Biden administration, this decision of the company to walk away from the project actually means that no, we are no longer in that cycle of
right.
back and forth potentially between administrations, but that, you know, could a company in the future apply for another pipeline that would take the same route? I suppose that they could. They would have to go through all of the same permitting processes that have been ongoing over, you know, up and down over the course of the last 13 years at various stages in this project. So it would be just like putting forth a new proposal for a pipeline anywhere. They would be starting from scratch. They would not have, you know, the perceived advantage of, oh, we just need this one permit to be able to move forward. So no, we are not going to see this pipeline come back in the same way that we have seen it come back, you know, back and forth over the past couple of administrations.
Okay. So now let's turn to, say, other pipelines. Are there other pipelines that may do the same thing? They just have a different route.
Well, so I think one of the things that we've seen, the Keystone XL pipeline and TC Energy, you know, walking away from this product or from this proposal is a product of an international movement. And that international movement is not going anywhere. It is frontline communities. It is indigenous leaders and its environmentalists who fought back against the Keystone XL pipeline and have won. It's the power of our communities. And so what we are seeing is that power has inspired many people across the country to stand up and to say, this isn't right for my community. We are at a point where we are well beyond where we need to be moving away from fossil fuels instead of building massive infrastructure projects that cross borders, that bring some of the dirtiest fuels into the United States that we have anywhere in the world. And so as we're looking at what just happened with the Keystone XL pipeline, we are also in the midst of working to stop another destructive tar sands pipeline project from moving forward in Minnesota, and that project is called Line 3.
Hmm. Line 3 in Minnesota. So this is a line that, again, would convey tar sands oil across the U.S.-Canadian border through Minnesota?
It is, and it's a Line 3 is a pipeline that has been in operation for many decades.
Oh.
It hasn't always carried tar sands, but it does right now, and it's been operating at a lower capacity because it is a very old pipeline. It's deteriorating, and so the company, instead of you know, cleaning up the mess that they've made, they are proposing, and they have been approved and are under construction for a larger, rerouted pipeline, effectively a brand new pipeline to replace this pipeline that shouldn't be allowed to operate anymore in the first place. And instead of having to clean up that mess, they were given the green light to go ahead and build this new pipeline, this bigger pipeline. And they are under construction right now. And it's a place where we are calling on President Biden to act to stop that project from moving forward. There has never been a federal environmental review done of that project. And there are numerous concerning impacts of that project, including the fact that we are at a point where the idea of building a larger fossil fuel pipeline, of expanding our dependence on this dirty, dirty product and our ability to move this dirty product is absolutely taking us back into the past. It's the wrong decision, and we are calling on the Biden administration to act.
Wow. Okay. So is this a pipeline that would convey as much as Keystone's was planned, up to 830,000 gallons per day? I mean, is it the same potential size and carrying
capacity?
This one
would be 760,000 barrels per day of tar sands. And the size of it means that there is the potential that it could move even more, but the permits would be for just slightly less than the Keystone XL pipeline at 760,000 barrels a day, but still an enormous amount. And this pipeline runs through more than 200 bodies of water, including the headwaters of the Mississippi River, which I was able to visit last weekend and see, you know, this stretch of waterway that would be impacted, and that folks have gathered along the Mississippi River to make that call on President Biden to not only stop the pipeline, but to uphold indigenous treaty rights. This is an area where the Anishinaabe people have lived since time immemorial, where they harvest one of their staple and sacred food crops, wild rice, and it's one of the only places in the world that that wild rice grows. And so to run an oil pipeline through this region of northern Minnesota, through the Mississippi headwaters region, it's egregious. I mean, yeah. It is truly in violation of many things that I personally hold dear, but truly one of the worst places you could put a pipeline.
Yeah, knowing where Keystone was running through, you know, and some of the sand hills in Nebraska and the environmentally sensitive areas there, this sounds magnitudes even worse. To run pipelines through, environmentally sensitive areas of Minnesota. Doesn't the state of Minnesota have any latitude to oversee and control this, the construction of this line, or is this a federally oversighted project?
So it's both. Like many of these pipelines, it spans across the state and then across an international border. The border crossing hasn't been at play here because that was a permit that was granted decades ago.
Right.
And so the state of Minnesota has had a lot of say, and they move forward through a handful of different permitting processes over the past couple of years, but ultimately they rubber stamped the project. They did not end up asking the right questions or taking into account a lot of the, you know, very sound arguments that folks brought forward that I firmly believe in, and reasons why I think they could have stepped up and very easily said, no, this is the wrong project for Minnesota. This is the wrong project to have moving forward at this point in time. So they did have the ability to, they did end up granting the permits, and then the Trump administration rushed to grant the federal permits last year. So that's where the Biden administration can now step in. Mm-hmm. Those are permits that they can reopen. It says in the permits that they can reopen them at any time. We're calling on them to use that authority to open the permits to do a federal environmental analysis, because we know that this project is wrong, not only for Minnesota, but for the country, for the world, the climate impacts that this would have, in addition to the impacts on indigenous people, on their sacred wild rice that grows there and on the headwaters of the Mississippi that so many of us downstream rely upon. The impacts are enough to say we don't need this, not to mention the fact that we are moving away from, we are using less oil. The demand is not there to expand a tar sands pipeline right now.
Right. let's be honest, we have lots of oil just coming out of this country, you know, through fracking processes in North Dakota and the different well fields in Texas, et cetera. We really don't need tar sands oil coming from Canada. We got plenty ourselves. Thank you. But we got to wrap up, Kathy. This line three, this sounds like, you know, Keystone 2.0. So where do people go to learn more about line three and what they can do to do what we can to kind of prevent the further construction of this line?
Absolutely. Folks can go to stopline3.org, and that's a coalition website. It has information about Line 3. It has places you can take action. And for those who are able, there's a call to join people on the front lines in northern Minnesota. Right now, you can find out more about how to do that at stopline3.org. We hope you will join us to call on the Biden administration to stop this pipeline. We are thrilled to see TC Energy walk away from Keystone XL, and we also know that the fight can't stop there.
All right, Kathy Collentine, Associate Director of Sierra Club's Beyond Dirty Fuels campaign. Thank you so much for chatting with us this morning on This Green Earth. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.